Fair warning, on this week's show, we have a ton of community feedback, and Sally and I get involved with a pretty long conversation about specialty ministries and disposable websites. You're not going to want to miss any of that, so stay tuned.
This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast. Thank you again for joining us once again for episode 284 for April 16th, 2013. This is a show about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And we're glad you joined the conversation. And also joining the conversation, as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
I'm great. I'm actually really energized this morning, Martin, because I had the privilege of attending an LWMS rally this past weekend.
Very cool.
It was just a great experience. One of the seminary students, Matt Rothy, presented on a Winterim trip he took to Malawi and shared video and pictures that were just so exciting and so invigorating. He even did something I've never seen done in well circles. He did a reverse offering. He passed out money from Malawi, and then he had us dance our way up and give offerings the way that they do in Malawi. So here were all these LWMS ladies, you know, a little bit kind of reserved, you might
Lutheran,
call us.
Yeah, these Lutheran ladies.
Yep. And we danced up to the altar. It was just such a wonderful experience.
Yeah, cool.
He did a great job. And, you know, kudos to Kingdom Workers for sending Matt and one of his classmates there on Winterim. It was a great experience for them.
Cool. Great way to bring kind of the reality of mission work and the joy of mission work to us here stateside. And I haven't done a lot of mission work. I spent a little bit of time in Mexico, and I've been over to Hong Kong and Japan, and you know, not really doing mission work, but being around missionaries and what they're doing. And it really is helpful to see what's going on there, to truly mm-hmm. appreciate it. And you kind of get it after you make some of those trips and talk to some of those people and see the amount of work and the importance of the work, and sometimes just the difficulties in sharing the gospel across the world. But what important work that is. And then these rallies are wonderful.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the national convention this summer in La Crosse. It's the 50th LWMS national convention, and I'm going to be there. I'm hoping maybe some other Wells Techers will be there, and we can say hello to each other then.
Is that at Luther High School? I think it is.
No.
Or are they doing it at a hotel?
Yeah, they have a convention location and many hotels around that area.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Should be very nice.
Cool. Well, speaking of mission work and ministry, you know, we talk about a lot of those things as it relates to technology on the show. Our theme of the day is pretty specific, and I think Sally, we spent a lot of time talking about church websites and schools using websites to communicate and you know, for outreach and whatever. But there's a whole little different niche or genre that we're going to talk about today, and that's what maybe I would call specialty or themed digital ministries, where an individual, a group of individuals, an organization gets together and says, we have a particular ministry or particular topic that we want to develop resources around. So it's not just around an organization like a church website. It's around a cause. It's around a particular outreach approach or a particular audience. And across the years, we've run across a number of these kinds of ministries, and we've highlighted them. But we thought maybe just a show about them, to talk about the different categories of them, the different ways that you can approach this, and see if there is maybe a potential in your ministry to use some of these kinds of techniques to spread the gospel?
Sure. And this could be your own personal ministry. It certainly could be taken on by a group of churches or a particular church, but more of a different focus than just the traditional church website. Yeah, it was kind of exciting as we begin to think about all the different things that we've been exposed to and build a list of all these specialty kind of websites. We were kind of surprised
just kept going.
Many there were. So this is one of those shows where you definitely want to check out the show notes. We're going to have an exhaustive list of links and ideas for you on wellstech.wells.net.
So I think there's kind of, in my mind, as I was working through our content for the show today, I kind of have two categories. And maybe you've done it a little bit differently in your mind, but I think there are ministry efforts, ministry sites. And just as an example, a Facebook page like He Loved Us First from Josh Renner. So there's an ongoing ministry that he has where he's putting up some Christian imagery each day and attaching a Bible passage to it. So that's an individual, but it's kind of a ministry approach, a ministry site. And that's going to keep going for some time. So it's something you go back to over and over and over again. But then there's another whole area of what I would maybe call single purpose or disposable sites. And these are sites that pop up around, let's say, a Bible study series or a sermon series. And I haven't seen this a lot in well circles, but I see it a lot in other evangelical circles where they're building a campaign, whether it be around a sermon series or a Bible study or some other program, that they get a URL, and then they advertise that URL. It goes on their promotional material. It goes on a brochure. It goes on a billboard. Goes out in email campaigns. Go to www.whateverit.com and learn more about this particular sermon series or Bible study or ministry effort. And then the thing happens. The event happens. Let's say it's a Lenten series. And then Easter comes, and then the site's done. So that's why I call it disposable. It's and these things are very easy to crank up because of some of the tools that we're going to talk about on the show today.
Sure. Tools like WordPress.com, where you can easily and quickly just create a site for free. Yeah. And, associate a domain name with it for $17 or something like that. So definitely easy to do. Also, maybe thinking outside the box a little bit, not just websites, but media content. So you build a series of videos and your YouTube channel becomes your website or whatever, and you have a presence that way. Or like you gave the example, a Facebook page instead of a traditional website. So lots of different flavors and channels that you can distribute things these days.
Yeah. You can literally spin these things up in a day. I mean, they're not hard. They're very inexpensive. So a domain you can get for between 10 and $15. And again, you can treat it as disposable or it can be long term. So let's look at some of the categories or examples, Sally. We did just a bunch of these, and some of these are long standing tools and ministry resources or digital ministries that we've talked about many times. So let's start with maybe the easiest thing to start up, and that's using a tool that you talked about, WordPress, a blog. So there are all kinds of blogs that we can reference that are very ministry or single focused. The one that came to my mind immediately was from Mark Cares, who's a pastor out in Idaho, and his weblog really has a single purpose, and that is to reach out to people who are ministering to Mormons or to Mormons themselves. Very popular site. We've talked to Mark in the past, and very easy to set up. It's kind of there's not a lot of bells and whistles, but it's got a very singular focus, and he spends his time writing and promoting it.
Right. A couple that I thought of were by Steve Brown, who's up in the Northeast area. I can't remember exactly, but somewhere in Massachusetts or somewhere, who does just worship ideas. He's into contemporary music mm-hmm. and worship planning. So he shares what he's doing and planning for his congregation, and lots of great resources there. And then another that I've talked about recently, just a blog site, holyhenhouse.com.
You brought that up last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. Just a group of Wells women who are blogging in a very contemporary delivery of their thoughts on everything from, they've been doing a series on losing children, you know, a miscarriage and that kind of thing. Mm. They have recipes on here. They have beautiful imagery on here. They have it all on Holy Hen House, and it's very appealing to females who are interested in the blogging space. So I think a great personal outreach just with a multi-author blog site. So it's not just one person producing the content.
Yeah, and I can imagine these sites cropping up for various different reasons. Maybe these ladies had coffee, you know, on a Monday morning, or they had a, you know, a mom's day out group or whatever, and they got to talking and said, you know, wouldn't it be great if we kind of put some of these ideas together and formalize it a little bit and make it our own ministry.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, easy enough to do. And I'm sure in a group like this, there's probably one person who's more techie who wants to, right, you know, take on the website duties. And, you know, the tools are out there. And so don't be afraid to dip your toe in the water just because of that. Don't be intimidated by it, because it's not hard.
Yep. Well, there's two. While it's not hard, I think there's two hard things about it. One is coming up with a good idea, because there's a lot of bad ideas out there, and those eventually flounder. The second hard part about it is to keep it going. So it's real easy to get up. The technology's not going to stand in your way. You know, as we're talking about here, lots of different tools you can use. But if you've got a good idea, then, you know, get it going, but then keep it going. And if it's a ministry worth doing, then you know, get behind it. So those are three great examples right off the bat that I think are, you know, wonderful opportunities to minister maybe to a segment that's either underserved or you could really benefit from this, and a good avenue for the gospel.
Definitely. We had a couple of examples that we wanted to share of just broader-based websites. Maybe larger groups are putting these together, but things like Men's Network, LHMMEN.com, where they've put together a lot of resources specifically targeted at men's and men's groups, and doing Bible study together, and all kinds of resources to support that.
Yeah, I believe that is a ministry coming out of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So there's an example of a church body, a larger organization, putting together a very specific thing, a specific niche ministry. And we could probably even jump to our own synod's whataboutjesus.com, because that's kind of a similar thing, where our synod decided, or a group within our synod decided, we need a site specifically for those people just considering Christianity, who don't know anything about Jesus. We want to, you know, the synod's website isn't really for them. It's too big, it's too broad, it's not specific enough, but whataboutjesus.com really drills down into the kind of the meaty, essential questions, and without the other, you know, kind of administrative kinds of things that you'll find on an organizational website. So kind of cuts through all that and says, here's just the information you need to know.
Mm-hmm. One more that I came across recently, we haven't talked about this site on the podcast before, Martin, but it's called fervor.net, and it's targeting youth, and I think it's out of Australia. So I'm not up on all of their doctrinal statements and things, but what I looked at, I thought was really well done. For instance, they have a series right now called Jesus' Epic Story, and they're basically going through the book of Mark chapter by chapter with a video series. So you can you know, follow along and hear the gospel explained to you in this series of videos called Jesus Epic Story. So again, looks to be a really active site. I'm not sure of exactly who's behind it, but it been winning some awards and things like that kind of brought it to the forefront. So.
Yeah, nice design and very attractive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a whole nother category that we've talked a lot about, and this show is an example of, and that's podcasts. Podcasts are usually themed or have a focus, have a ministry idea. Ours is obviously trying to follow technology for ministry's sake. But ours is obviously not the only one. We've talked to a number of people in the past who have podcasts that have different focuses.
Right. We talked recently with Pastor Tom Bartel and several others who are involved in Cana Bound podcast.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that is basically bringing together devotional type materials from several sources. They do about a 20, 25 minute show. They bring in a little bit of news and other information. But for the most part, it's textual devotions as well as music. So just a good thing for your morning commute or whatever. Another person that we've talked to is Pastor Don Patterson from Holy
right.
Word in Austin, Texas.
Reason for Hope, yeah.
And they basically have a radio ministry that they've had for quite a while, but they are repurposing that on the web and also delivering it in podcast format. So
yeah.
great resource there as well. And, you know, reaching different audiences through the radio and the web.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of radio shows that I'm aware of, including Issues Etc., Christ-Centered, Cross-Focused Talk Radio, and Pirate Christian Radio. A couple of those are more deep in their message, more discussing doctrinal kind of issues and that kind of thing, but using the podcast format for that niche delivery.
Yep. So we've talked about blogs, we've talked about websites, we've talked about podcasts, which are predominantly still audio, although ours is a video. But there's a whole new area, and that is with the advent of YouTube allowing for longer videos. You can have a YouTube channel about a particular topic. So that would be a, you know, video podcast, but it doesn't have to be regular. It just can be a place where you throw your videos up there and people consume that content around a particular ministry topic. And we found a couple of those, at least in the Lutheran area, that are getting some traction.
Right, this Lutheran satire site. I think we've talked about this before on the podcast.
Yep.
Kind of cartoony, tongue-in-cheek kind of look at beliefs and practices common in the Lutheran Church. And then also Jonathan Fisk, who's a Missouri Synod pastor, has a very popular YouTube site. He has a website as well behind this called Worldview Everlasting. But he does these really kind of edgy, quick videos and has garnered a whole lot of views and a lot of discussion through his video series that he posts.
Yeah, he's a Missouri Synod pastor, as you mentioned, and you know, some would maybe call him controversial just because of, you know, the edgy approach that he takes, but the message is pretty solid, at least the ones that I've seen. And not long ago, President Harrison from the Missouri Synod, who's the president of the Missouri Synod, our Mark Schrader, so to speak, mm-hmm. Even put out his own video talking about Pastor Fisk and his work, and was complimentary. So he came out and said, this is a good thing. This is a viable ministry, and I think useful, you know, for ministry work in our church body. So very interesting.
Yeah. Definitely using the tools that God's placed before us to do that outreach in different ways.
More than one way to skin a cat. So.
You can also use e-news to deliver messages. Here's an example from Pastor Mark Gabb, who has a Daily Bread newsletter that he does, just a short Bible reading and a prayer that he sends out on weekdays from his church in Beverly Hills, Florida. And he's using MailChimp to deliver this free tool. So there's basically no cost except his time in putting it together and putting it out there. But a great way to distribute God's word to people's email box.
Yeah, and we did a show, we'll put that in the show notes if Sally would be gracious enough to research that one. But there were a number of pastors who were using WordPress and MailChimp or other delivery techniques to do basically that same thing, that short devotional that goes out on a regular basis. So there's that's a ministry in and of itself too, because hopefully it's not just for member ministry, but you're gaining an audience that is broader than that. So another area, and I mentioned it at the top of the show, that is obviously a natural for ministry type topics, and that's social networks. I talked about He Loved Us First from Josh Renner. So there's a great example, and very successful one, where you got thousands and thousands of followers. Clark Schultz, who we I think featured their ministry on the show a while back, has just a movie review segment that he posts in connection with Steve Zambo on Facebook, and it's just a very singular focused ministry that says, "Hey, I'm gonna watch movies, and I'm gonna tell you what I think from a Christian perspective." So, very niche, but potentially useful.
Definitely. You can also use mobile devices to reach people with the gospel. And we've talked about in the past things like a prayer notebook app. And we've just recently discussed the new ebook for iPad called Who is Jesus? And both of those are basically making use of that mobile technology to spread God's word via a mobile platform. So if there are developers out there who want to create niche mobile applications, certainly mobile is where it's at these days, where all the development is headed, because they're in everyone's pocket, got the word there with them.
Yep. And then finally, to close out, just the wealth of examples out there, and this is just a small subset, of course, multimedia resources. We talked a couple weeks ago with Carissa Nelson, who does some fabulous artwork. And there are photography sites, there are free Bible images sites. Last Saturday, I was at a board of directors meeting for Christ in Media. By the way, shout out to Tom Custer, who is the executive director there, who's a frequent watcher of the show or listener of the show. But that reminded me of some of the things that that we saw, Sally, at that Christ in Media conference, with Bible stories in foreign languages, images, cartoons, all the resources that are out there, very focused ministries that in many cases are just providing these for free. So as you get hooked up with some of these resources, just identifying them as things that you can use in your ministry. But if you are a media creator, an author, an illustrator, or whatever, what a great outlet that could be to serve other people with the stuff that you create with your particular ministry.
Definitely. Things that we can take and then use to further the message, So if you're looking for the right thing, there are resources that are being provided for you and at a free cost to enhance your website or whatever it may be.
So, and on whatever platform, we've talked about YouTube, Facebook, WordPress, get your own hosting site. DreamHost allows nonprofits to host there for free. The technology shouldn't be standing in your way. And then figure out what kind of delivery method you want to use, whether it's a video, an audio, a blog, an email, newsletter, whatever it is. You've got a ton of different options. So we've never been at a time where self-publishing like this has been so easy. If you've got a great idea and you've got some gifts that God has given you, find an avenue, to let those resources become usable by other people and potentially then used by God to share that gospel.
Yep, good stuff. And that's exactly what we tied in with this discussion, an interview with Pastor Mark Parsons and Matt Visaggio. They are working on exactly that kind of site. It's called Bread for Beggars. It's a specialty website just to reach out with the good news, kind of started through the South Atlantic District and members down there, and they're sharing a mashup of a lot of great content in a very pleasing way. I think you'll be excited to to see and hear about the ministry of Bread for Beggars. So
yeah, kind of their tagline is sharing the bread of life through multimedia. So they're trying to grab multimedia resources, bring them together that are useful, good Christian content, and letting people use those resources by coming to their site. So let's listen to our conversation with the folks behind Bread for Beggars, Mark Parsons and Matt Visaggio. We'd like to welcome to the show Pastor Mark Parsons from Port Charlotte, Florida, sunny Port Charlotte, Florida. He is the pastor there at Christ the King. And also Matt Visaggio from, I'm assuming, sunny North Fort Myers, Matt?
Yes.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you for joining us, guys. One thing that we were very intrigued by is a website that you both are involved with, Maybe a website isn't even the proper term. Maybe it's more of a ministry. I don't know. But you're going to let us know a little bit about Bread for Beggars. But before we do that, maybe let's take a little bit of time to have you introduce yourself to our audience. Just kind of a little bit of a bio background, you know, what you're doing in your congregations ministry-wise and those kinds of things. Mark, why don't we start with you?
Yeah. I have been out in the field. This is my fourth year now in warm and sunny Charlotte, Florida. It's mostly a snowbird community. Our congregation, as well as our community, about doubles in size from November through April. And so it's a very transitional town. And so as we started to do ministry here, we tried to figure out ways in which we could be relevant in a town where half the people aren't here half the year. And we have stumbled upon just a number of unique ministries, including a teen ministry that has really been kind of the impetus behind starting Bread for Beggars. That is, just using technology in worship with those teens was one of the reasons we wanted to share that with other people in the Wells.
Beautiful. Wife, kids, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I've got a lovely wife, Molly, who is very supportive in ministry, both just saying, honey, I love you, and as well as being very involved behind the scenes, both with work here at Christ the King, as well as on the site itself. I've got two children. Jonas is 4, Annabella is 2, and one on the way, which hasn't been named fully yet, so I won't share that.
Congratulations on that. Thank in you. Advance. I assume you don't hail from Port Charlotte. Are you a Midwestern guy?
No, I'm actually from Montrose, Colorado.
Oh, okay.
I miss my mountains right now, but enjoy the sun and the beach. So.
Okay. Yeah, take up a different kind of skiing.
Yeah.
Matt, how about yourself? Thanks for joining us, by the way.
Absolutely. Matt Visaggio from North Fort Myers, Florida, and was a classmate of Pastor Parkson's for a couple of years at MLC. And he came down to Port Charlotte after he graduated from the seminary, and he recently asked me to get involved with Bread for Beggars, and it's been an honor to do so. I spend my day job working at a local technology firm called Atlas. We do advanced web application development, software development, website design, anything online, and. So this is kind of a real good area where I enjoy being involved with technology and being involved with trying to build momentum for a nonprofit, especially one that's so Christ-centered and valuable. My personal favorite part of this is that I don't think it's being done in the Wells. I don't think we are I think it's a niche that we can really fill with good, high-quality Christian music content. It's just, it's inspiring to be a part of this. So,
very good. Well, a perfect introduction then, inspiring website, inspiring ministry. We'd love to hear more about Bread for Beggars, what it is and what the name means maybe and who all's involved in it and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it really started, I guess it was last summer at the South Atlantic District Convention. I was in a breakout group where we were discussing technology and its use in ministry. And I started talking to a man named Nate Locke, a layperson that was over on the other coast in Florida. And at that point, we kind of hatched the idea of a collaborative sharing website. The original concept is nothing like it is today, but we kind of got the wheels turning. We both used a lot of technology in our own churches and wanted to find a way that we could share that with the church at large, especially with Wells members. And so we started putting together a team last summer, came up with a name. I had always loved the quote from Martin Luther where he said, "We're all beggars, that's true," or "We're all beggars indeed." And I stumbled upon a quote from a man named Steve Brown who elaborated on that quote and said that his job as a pastor is just one beggar showing other beggars where to find bread. And that's really the purpose of Bread for Beggars, is that we have found high quality Christian media that we are being fed by as individuals. And we want to just be able to share that with pastors and lay people to get more people involved in ministry in their daily lives.
So, Mark, the content comes from all over the place, and it's basically curated by the different members of Bread for Beggars. Is that how it works, or does it all come through you? How does the process work?
Thanks. The majority of it is curated through me. We have 9 bloggers that have just really come on board since the first of the year. We're still really trying to get that part to work well as far as how we're going to submit posts and the media that they're submitting. And so it all does get run by me at some point, but we're trying to get to a point where we're having other editors. My wife is involved in that. Matt's wife has done some editing. That's one of the parts that we're really trying to streamline it so that not all of it has to come across my desk every day. Okay. But the content does come from all over Christianity. If it's a sermon, it is strictly Wells. If it is a written blog post, that's strictly Wells. But as far as music content, as long as it's Christ-centered and biblical, we're bringing that in from various church bodies.
So how's the site organized? It looks like you've got a number of different categories as you scroll maybe down the right side of the screen. And across the top, you've got arts, resources, those kinds of things. What's the thinking behind, you know, how you're putting this together?
We're trying to make it, and this is a part that is still in development. I've probably gone as far as I can as a web developer. That's one person we're looking for, someone to take it to the next level as far as archiving the posts and content. Right now, the only part that is really searchable by just clicking on different slides is the blogs. But we're trying to categorize by the church year as far as sermons. We've got 3 different pastors that contribute towards a church year sermon. We've got one pastor that's doing a more series-based sermon for us. That's Pastor Jason Ewert from Wisconsin. Along the right side there is just all of the different blogs. We really try and highlight those, draw people into those each week.
So the blogs are part of the site, or are they independent blogs that you're just tapping into?
Several of them were independent blogs. The James Hine, who was a pastor, he has been running his blog for about 3 years. We asked him if we could just start featuring his content. So he still has his own site. Most of the other bloggers are just unique to Bread for Beggars itself as far as the content that's on there.
Awesome. So what are the goals for the site? Who are you trying to reach, and how are you going about doing that?
We're trying to model the ministry of Bread for Beggars after a few other resources we had discovered. One was Mars Hill. It's a pastor, Mark Driscoll, the Gospel Coalition, Tully and Chavijan, and his Liberate website. All of their ministries are really meant to inspire other people to get involved in ministry. And so that's really what Bread for Beggars is all about, is rather than just giving resources to pastors, I don't know how many resources come across my desk or through my email every day that I simply don't have time to really sift through. So we're trying to get some of these resources into the hands of lay people so that maybe they can pick something up and run with with it rather than saying, hey, pastor, I've got this, I saw this great idea, you should do this. We want to try and get some of those resources into the hands of lay people themselves so that they could actually carry out a Bible study or a ministry on their own within their congregation.
So, Matt, let me ask you a question. As, you know, now a layman, and as you're looking at this site, how are you trying to reach out to that particular demographic? It's, I think in the Wells, it's been a lot easier to reach out to pastors because we know who they are. We have a yearbook full of them. We, you know, we have conferences with them. Lay people are all over the board. You know, what's the, how are you getting Bread for Beggars into, you know, in, on the screens of those lay people?
Absolutely. And I think at this point in the development of the site and of the ministry, it's really the strength of the mission and Pastor Parsons' ability to get others to buy into it and to understand what the purpose and goal is. And once they clearly understand what that is, I think more people have been really receptive to becoming involved. And I think a lot of the way that it will catch on in the future is through social media.
Yeah, I noticed you have a Facebook page, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. And typically with websites that we work on at our firm, we don't push a lot of people into the social networking realm and advertising on Facebook. But in this case, it proved to be a really incredible opportunity to use the ministry and to show lay people that their gifts that are going on the website are reaching people in Pakistan and throughout the world with the gospel. And I think that's also part of it, is that people in the Wells, lay people, at least younger people, so our age, you know, 20s to 35, 40 years old, are sitting in front of their computer all day. They're working in offices. This gives them an opportunity to serve the Lord wherever they are in the United States, who are lay people in the Wells, and do so from a computer. So it just presents so many opportunities for people to get involved in an easy way.
Mark, is this the goal of Bread for Beggars? Is it more inspirational, educational, or is it maybe a tool in the hands of, let's say, a layperson to reach out and share content with their unchurched friends and family members, or all of the above?
I would say some of it's all of the above. As I was talking to Matt this morning, he was asking me to clarify some of that too. A lot of it comes from a worship class that I had at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary with Professor Tiefel, where he ingrained in us that when it comes to worship and outreach, there are a number of things to really remember. And one of those is, let the tradition of the church be honored. Number two was, let the people participate. Number three is, let all of God's best gifts be used. And that's really what we're trying to do with this website, is let people participate. And, you know, we've got resources coming in from Wells lay people and pastors from all over the world. But we're also trying to get those into the hands of lay people so they can simply share them with their friends on Facebook or download one of the videos and show it in a teen Bible class. As far as letting all of God's best gifts be used, that's just an incredible thing that we've been able to do at our church with a lot of these very graphic videos that just show the message of Christ in a very unique way. I'll just give one example. We have on the front page of Bread for Beggars right now, there is a video.
Uh-oh. There's a video.
It kind of froze there.
It froze, yeah.
Say that again. On the front page, Mark, you were saying there's a video?
Yeah, on the front page of the Bread for Beggars, there's a video called Dead Come Alive by Chris Powers. Right there, the Jesus breaking the chains. We used that in our teen group Bible study last night, and it was just an incredible opportunity to share with two young people that had never really heard the salvation story before. One was a young man, we'll call him Brandon, that happened to just ride his bike in off the street last night. He was looking for some adults to talk to. He's an atheist. He said, I hate church. I hate God. And we got talking. He realized that I wasn't that angry of a Christian like most of the Christians he had met. I convinced him to sit down and watch this video in our Bible class with us. And he said that he had never heard the gospel like that. He had never wanted to sit and listen to the story of Jesus. And this video just captured him. He said he was going to be back next week. He was going to bring a friend. There was another young lady there last night that just tears welled up in her eyes. And I asked her why she was crying. And she said she didn't know that God could love her for that. And that this media just touched these young people in a way that I had never seen. And then we spent the next 35 minutes talking about this video. And it's the lyrics that are contained. It's kind of a rap. Most of the kids in our group are African American, and they just ate it up. And that's really where this started, was with a lot of those videos that we use in our teen group. Other pastors were saying, can we share these with our teens? Can we share them with our congregations? And we just wanted to find a way to do that.
Very good. What kind of plans do you have for the future? Are you doing more development for the site, or what other things does Bread for Beggars have planned?
I'll let Matt jump on that one first. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, and that's kind of where we are now. I work at a technology firm, but I'm not a programmer. And at this point, one of the things that we've talked about is the need for us to find someone who has a programming background to take us to the next level. Because as the site develops, as it grows in content, we're going to need to look for ways to move content to the right servers, to cross-share content, to just keep up the quality and the speed of the site. And a lot of that is going to take some programming, some PHP development skills, that kind of stuff, or .NET programming skills for us to continue to do well. Pastor Parsons and I have, and I believe Pastor Parsons' brother is been involved in the creation of the infrastructure of the website, and it's good now. But as anything grows and builds, it's going to need some help. So if this message gets out to a Wells programmer, and there's someone who wants to donate their time, we will not turn you away. I won't speak for Pastor, but I'm pretty safe in saying that we're looking for that talent right now.
Mark, what about you? Where do you see this all headed?
One of the things that we really want to start developing in the next couple of months is, rather than primarily featuring music from the church at large, we want Bread for Beggars to be a site where we can inspire artists within our own synod to create these high-quality videos. Koine has done some of those with Jason Jasperson, and we're really excited that some of that's starting to happen. And we're over the next few months, we're going to put a plea out to just even people not in a band like Koine or Stephen Bautista, but just lay people out there that are great musicians. We're going to try and encourage them to start just filming a video, even if it's just with their web camera or a camera that they have at their church. One of the goals is eventually to have an archive of good Lutheran hymnody done in a modern way. We're starting to get a good collection of that already. We'd like to just use this as a way to, if there's a kid with a guitar that says, hey, I'd love to play a Mighty Fortress Is Our God with a rock band, you know, let's get that on our website. Things like that is what I'm excited as going forward. We would eventually like to host a Bread for Beggars conference where we would bring in musical artists from across the Wells, speakers that would come more not as a here's a how-to on how to do ministry or technology, but just as an inspirational way to get people involved in ministry, to get excited about the gospel again. So in the next couple of years, that's really where we'd like to be, is hosting an annual Bread for Beggars conference, perhaps in Orlando, warm and sunny down here, or maybe in the great state of Wisconsin. We'll see.
That sounds very cool. And that's kind of where you know I thought this might be going, rather than just a simple website where you're presenting content. This is a community. This is a community of artists that you want to encourage and promote and aggregate their good stuff so that other people can enjoy that and use that in their ministries too. So cool. Very cool. Guys, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. We'll be keeping an eye on what's going on your site. And please keep us posted on future plans that you have. We'd love to keep promoting what you're doing. I enjoy the site, and I think others do too. So thanks for your time.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Our appreciation and thanks again to Mark and Matt for taking the time and for the work that they're doing. This is a cool site, Sally.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. That's actually how I found the Holy Hen House, because they're one of the bloggers that they've tied into Bread for Beggars. But there's so much there. I can't wait to explore further and to see the new development that they're talking about and the exciting new things they're planning for the site as well.
Cool. So that is it breadforbeggars.com? I just want to make
it
sure.
It is.
Breadforbeggars.com is the website if you want to go and visit and follow what they're doing. Very cool.
And you can like them on Facebook and get it right there in your Facebook feed.
That's how I get my stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sally, let's move on to our picks of the week.
Very good. I have a pick of the week tied into our discussion as well, and that is the InternetEvangelismDay.com website. Another one of those specialty websites geared toward using the web to do outreach. And this one is actually, it exists to give you free resources to share and ideas for sharing via the web your faith and the good news of Jesus Christ. And in particular, this is a special week for internet evangelism because this Sunday, April 21st, has been designated as Internet Evangelism Day. And they do this on a yearly basis. Martin, we've talked about this over the course of the podcast several years. We've made mention of the fact that Internet Evangelism Day is on the calendar. We actually had an interview with the man behind the site several years ago. He's based out of England, and that was a really fun interview.
Cool, yeah.
He has a lot of enthusiasm for the work that is being done on the site. And so this Sunday, you're encouraged to bring this up, to make people aware of the fact that they can do outreach via the web and, you know, perhaps instruct them. They have a page on their website just dedicated to planning this in your church. And they give you lots of ideas for sharing this. For instance, project a live online demonstration of using a Pinterest account and adding content that is appropriate to the evangelistic or conversation starting type materials. So just one example of one little thing you could do in your church to educate people, to bring them up to speed on how they could share things. Perhaps people in your church aren't aware of your Facebook page and how they can click share on things that are posted on the Facebook page to put it on their own page and extend the conversation that way. Just get people thinking about using the web to share their faith. And that's kind of the focus of the whole site. It's not looking for this major, overhaul of everything you're doing, but more giving you ideas, little ways that you can implement it. They have a Facebook page. Internet Evangelism Day is on Facebook, so you can like them there and get access to their content in your Facebook feed. They also have a blog. It's called Digital Evangelism Issues, where they regularly post articles, and I subscribe to this RSS feed. They're always sharing ebooks and ideas for doing outreach, new mobile apps, for instance, or videos or whatever it may be. They have lots going on the site. They seem to really be keyed in on all the different Christian material that's out on the web. And, you know, obviously you got to review the material and decide for yourself about whether you want to share it or not. But I think it's a really great launching spot and definitely a lot of great ideas for you to make use of and modify and bring into your congregation to encourage your members to use this great outreach tool. So InternetEvangelismDay.com and all the associated content, I highly recommend.
Great pick, Sally. My pick is kind of a tie-in to what we've been talking about for the theme of the show, and that is some of these specialty websites and what you obviously are web content. And normally what you would need, whether it's a blog or a website or whatever, is a domain name. And, you know, choosing that domain name is kind of important because you want it to be memorable, easy for people to type in. And you probably, in many cases, like if you use Final Web, a domain name is provided once you start up your organization's website. But there would be other maybe disposable names or one-off types of domain names that you want to register for whatever reason, and you need to use a domain name registrar to do that. And there are, you know, there are sites like GoDaddy and, you know, those things that are maybe maybe not the most ethical, Christian-focused, and I'm not saying that my pick is, but I've tried a bunch of these, and hover.com is the one that I currently use to register domain names. There's Namecheap, there's a bunch of them out there, but Hover's the one that I use and would recommend. I find them to be very reliable and responsive, and one of their claim to fame is if you call them, you will never get a voicemail. You'll always talk to a real person. So that high touch customer service, and domain names can be a little bit tricky. So you want to get a registrar that you can trust. They charge $15 for most of their domain names. It's $15 a year. If you want to add email, you can do that, I think, for another $5 a year. So for $20, actually it's $5 period. I don't think you have to repay that every year. So for $15, you can grab your domain name. For another $5, you can get an email address. But really, this is kind of the best approach. Even if you're doing a WordPress blog, or you know, you're not going to host or create your site on Hover, and they really don't even do that, or at least that's not their main business. You can register your domain and then just point it to or forward traffic from this central location. So if you have a number of these, it pays to really kind of keep these together so that you can manage them all from one spot and then forward to whatever location, whatever WordPress blog or Drupal site or even Final website, you could do it that way, you know, from this location. And then you've got control of it in one location and you're not wondering. Sometimes you'll get these, Sally, these advertisements in the form of, well, you need to renew your registration. I know I get a lot of emails like that from confused pastors and church leaders saying, well, we got this little thing in the mail or email that says I need to register or re-register or renew my domain. If you keep them all in one place, then any email or piece of mail coming from anybody other than, let's say, Hover, you know, is kind of a scam or just an advertisement. So keeps things simple, keeps things logical, and just a kind of a good practice to use one of these services, whether it's Hover or whatever else it is, just to kind of centralize all your domain names as those might continue to grow. So that is my pick of the week, in this case, hover.com. But, you know, whatever your registrar of choice is, pick one. Stick with it, and don't be afraid to register those domains, because you, who knows, at some point you may need them in the future for, like I say, a sermon series, a program that you're running, a Bible study series. It's cheap to do, and probably good practice.
Makes me smile. How many of those domain name conversations have you been in where you're trying to figure out the perfect domain name? Yeah. It's a challenge. It's a fun process to go through, but yeah.
And this site, and like others too, this isn't the only one that does it, but if you type in a name that you think you want, but it's already taken, they'll make suggestions, kind of variations. They'll drop a vowel or they'll add a dash, or they'll say, well, it's not available in .com, but it is available in .net or .us or whatever. So these services are good at that. And obviously they're in the business to sell you a domain, but it's nice to kind of have a central source for that. So
very good. Excellent research.
Sally, we have a Wells.net feature of the week this week, don't we?
We do, although it doesn't look like your traditional Wells.net page. It's your grandma's Wells.net page. This is a Wells.net page geared to our Spanish-speaking friends. It's El Mensajero Luterano Is that how you say
yep.
it, Martin?
Yep.
All right. And it is a brand new site, all in Spanish. And for those of you like me who don't speak Spanish, we even have a convenient button so you can translate to English with one click. The entire site translates as well. This is done through our friends at Multilanguage Publication, who are busy reaching out to all the languages of the world with the good news of Jesus Christ. And lots of effort went into this, and we are excited to see it launch.
Yep. This is just the first in a series that we're going to be doing. We're going to try and work with Multilanguage Publications to get as many of these out as possible. This is just our first foray. Spanish is a natural one because we do have domestic Spanish ministries. And this site is really kind of a whataboutjesus.com concept, where it's very focused on the unbeliever and getting good what about Jesus type content in front of them. And this one really focuses on some of the multimedia stuff that's available. So kudos to Multilanguage Publications, in particular Sylvia Falcone, their new digital publications coordinator, and Gonzalo Degadillo down there, who did a lot of the work. And you can actually see Gonzalo mm-hmm. in some of these video devotions that are on the site. So, and then, of course, Julie Duran in our office, who did a lion's share of the work in getting this site up and running. The next site that we're going to be doing is also very exciting, and that is in the Urdu language to minister to some of our people out in the area of Pakistan, which is a field certainly ripe for harvest and getting God's word out there. So that'll be a little bit challenging because Urdu is nothing like our Latin character set. So we're going to have to work with some script and some right to left action on the webpage. So we'll see how that goes. So
fun stuff. Good challenges for us.
Absolutely. Speaking of challenges.
Yeah. Another Wells event to talk about, or Wells site to talk about, and it's specific to Wells Tech, yep. and that's the Wells Tech Camp that's coming up this fall, September 14th, at Martin Luther College. You can find out more at wellstechcamp.wikispaces.com, where we have the ability to reserve your seat. The entire event is free, so we just want you to come and be a part of it. Maybe I'll turn off my edit privileges here so you see it a little bit cleaner look. We're doing the unconference thing at this Wells Tech Camp. So bring your ideas for discussion. We're going to divide up into rooms and just talk about all different things related to tech and ministry. It can be in the church, in the school, or personal ministry ideas. And we've set up some events. If you're arriving early, you can join us for a Friday evening meal at the Kaiserhof restaurant there in New Ulm, very famous New Ulm location. And we've also got some hotel deals posted on the website as well. So if you're planning to come in and spend Friday or Saturday night, or perhaps both, you can find some good deals related to hotels here on the website as well. So please plan to join us at Martin Luther College on September 14th.
That's going to be cool, Sally. I've never been to an unconference, like this one. And that's why I said it's a challenge for us, because it's something new for us. But fortunately, on our committee, we have people who are veterans of unconferences and have led these. So I have no doubt that this is going to be a very cool event. And I'm looking forward to meeting Wells Techers that'll be there and others to talk about ministry and where technology meets ministry. And beautiful venue there in New Ulm, Minnesota, at a time of the year where, it shouldn't be too snowy yet, right?
I don't know. We may never get rid of it. It's still white outside my window. We'll see.
All right. Let's move on to community feedback.
All right. And we have a lot of great feedback. As usual, our Wells Techers come through for us. Here's a pin from our friend Perry Lund at Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa. How Google Glass works. So it's kind of the breakdown of the whole projection system and the prism that projects in front of your eye. It gives you an example of how you can see reality behind the layer that you're viewing the world through, and just different ways that it can be viewed based on your focal point and how it works even with glasses on. You can have the Google Glass overlay your regular glasses. So interesting technology, not something that seems real to me yet because it's not something I've experienced, but to actually see this simplified kind of breakdown of what's going on and what you can expect with it makes a little more real.
Yep.
So. Via Digo, we had several links shared, including from Rachel Pearson at Trinity in Waukesha, 10 must-have tools for schools implementing one-to-one. And Rachel's doing one-to-one this year in her classroom. She's got a Google Chromebooks classroom going, and I'm sure if she's recommending the article, there's probably a lot of great stuff here. Things like acceptable use policy guidance, Q&A for families, tips for managing and care, and different things like that. So great ideas here. If you're looking at implementing one-to-one next year in your classroom, perhaps this is a good starting point for you. Also via Digo, Ryan Rosenthal from Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, shared a website through PBS called Shakespeare Uncovered. And Ryan said this would be great for anyone in the language arts area who's looking to learn more about Shakespeare. So check it out if that's your venue.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then my friend Martin shared a link on Digo.
Yeah, I ran across this. This is not a blog I'm familiar with, WAZMAC, WAZMAC.com. And it's called The Staff Room, Thoughts and Discussions in the Life of an Educator. And this particular article compares Edmodo, Schoology, and Moodle. This is an article written middle of last year, last summer, in fact. So I just ran across it the other day, and does a nice job of kind of a point-by-point description of both all three of these learning. Are they learning management systems? Yeah, learning sure. management systems. All of them do it in a little bit different way. And we've talked about all three on the show, and we've actually tried each of these. So it's a it's a very interesting approach to each one. And if you're interested in kind of considering which one might be best for you, then this would be a great. It's not a long read, but it does kind of just give you the facts, at least from a teacher's perspective, of the pluses and the minuses and their experiences with each of these tools. So take a look at that blog post if that is something that you are considering, maybe as a project over the summer to determine, you know, if one of these tools is going to make its way onto your campus or into your classroom.
Yeah, I love that they kind of categorized them as to the weightiness or, you know, the things you can do with it, how robust the system is. Some are more light duty, maybe geared toward younger students where you're doing just some basic things as opposed to more heavy lifting, maybe with Moodle where you have a lot more flexibility and things.
Yep.
But tech support is a must with a Moodle install. So yeah, you got your pluses and minuses there.
Yep.
Good article.
Yeah.
All right, moving on, we had a tweet again from Perry Lund, who shared a podcast, Mac Power Users Podcast. In particular, this episode 132 is titled Merlin Returns, because Merlin Mann, who is the guy behind 43 Folders, comes on the show, and they talk about particularly GTD, or getting things done, productivity kind of concepts, right up your alley, Martin. I know you're our productivity guy. I gave a listen, and I was really excited because he's talking about Evernote, which is something I'm working with right now. It's one of my 10 tools for 2013 that I'm trying to implement and see if it's really going to have an impact on what I do. And Merlin's real honest, and I've listened and heard some other people say you either love it or hate it kind of thing. It's something you really have to adopt. And in this podcast, he's explaining how he really did adopt it and how it has made a difference for him. So very timely for me personally, but for anybody that's interested in productivity tips, perhaps you want to give this podcast a listen. It's not short. I think it's like two hours.
No, it's over 2 hours. I listened to to a portion of it as well. And yeah, I enjoyed it as well because I am an Evernote user. Mm-hmm. I kind of I kind of live two productivity lives, at least as far as note-taking. Evernote is all for my personal stuff, so everything that I do on the personal side is in Evernote. But on my professional side, then, because we're a Microsoft shop here in the Synod office, I use OneNote. So I get to compare actually both of those, and they both have their strengths and weaknesses. So this was an interesting podcast from that perspective too. I think some of the general concepts though, which come out in the podcast, are very important about the importance of, you know, writing stuff down and organizing it. And then probably the most important point is being able to find it. So if you're using a tool that forces you into a structure that's hard to remember in and of itself, like a hierarchical folder structure, that's probably not the best approach. So you need something that's searchable, that you can get, you know, get the stuff back at a moment's notice, because that's the whole point of writing it down in the first place.
Very good. So we're going to call you Sybil from now on with your split personality there, huh?
I've been called worse.
Moving on, we had a tweet from, and these were Wells Ed tweets that I picked up on, from Dale Witte, who teaches at Winnebago Lutheran Academy, a music teacher and someone you know, Martin.
That's my brother-in-law, yep.
Yeah.
Very gifted individual in the music space, yeah.
He's excited about this software called Fourscore and the fact that it's coming out with a new version for iPad that basically, I had no idea that this existed, but it will read PDF music files, read the music, and turn
and
it into music. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Which is just really amazing. And
well, you would think that that's possible, because you can do that with text.
Sure.
You know, with OCR, you can plug that in and it'll scrape it and then read it back to you. Why not with music? That's cool.
Right. And this review talks specifically about Fourscore, but they also make mention of a competitor called Unreal Book. And so if you're a music teacher and you aren't aware of this capability for iPad, it sounds like really exciting technology. This new version that they're promoting here allows you to kind of lock the students into this app, so they can't exit the app or get to extraneous stuff on the iPad, but they're, you know, you hand them an iPad for their sectionals or whatever it
perfect.
May be.
Yeah,
really amazing technology. So good stuff for music teachers.
Cool.
Also, a Wells Ed tweet from Justin Leppert, who also teaches at Winnebago Lutheran Academy, the 22 milestones of educational technology. So this is one of those famous infographics that are so popular. We probably should pin this. It's just screaming to be pinned. But anyway, they go from 1635, when the first public school was established, all the way through all the introduction of computers and how computers are used in the classroom and the changes over time, bringing us up to iPads in the classroom in 2011. So a neat historical kind of look at technology and milestones in education.
Cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of a little bit of trivia for you, Sal, you mentioned the first school was started. You know where the first kindergarten was started?
I don't.
Watertown, Wisconsin.
Oh, my goodness. How about that?
So home of Luther Prep. And those in Well circles know that that's one of our Luther Prep schools. So also the site of the first kindergarten in the U.S.
How about that? Good stuff.
And now kindergarten's not even the first step, you know, with all the initiatives. Now everybody's got to go to preschool. So.
Early childhood is where it's at, for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, we heard from our friend Leslie Bergerman, who shared on our Facebook page an upcoming webinar sponsored by Church Mutual. And they're going to be looking at social media best practices for congregations and teen ministries. They say they're going to provide you with tips for using this rapidly growing medium safely. So they have an attorney that's participating in this webinar. It is free to attend. It's on April 25th, starting at 11 a.m. Central Time, and they're expecting about 45 minutes, a 30-minute presentation with 15 minutes for Q&A at the end. Sounds like a good webinar to attend.
Absolutely. And Church Mutual obviously has a vested interest in this, especially for their own customers.
Right, the liabilities.
There are liabilities related to inappropriate use of social media, especially, you know, in nonprofits.
Definitely. All right. Finally, we heard from Beth Weed. I don't know if we've ever heard from Beth before on
the
podcast.
I don't think so.
Happy to receive an email from Beth. And she identified herself as being someone who works with operations science, which I wasn't familiar with. Perhaps we've looked at this site before, but I don't remember. Anyway, it looks like it's set up for Wells schools, especially in the southeastern Wisconsin district. And it is a place where you can check out or rent science units. And they have all this material available for you. And it's tied to taking a course at Wisconsin Lutheran College in the summer. So there are training sessions that you sign up for, and then you reserve the materials for a quarter of your school year. And they have materials from K through 8, I believe, or maybe all the way through 12th grade. But they have
it says
just
higher ed there too. Yeah.
Sure. And so you check it out, and here's a picture on the screen of, you know, amazing resources that they share with you for this rental period of these resources. So if you're interested, there are training dates coming up this summer at Wisconsin Lutheran College, and all of that for free because Beth just wrote to us with a different question. So just wanted to give her some props with Operation Science before we got to her question. And that was associated with Google Forms. She apparently is a big Google Forms user and a fan, and has shared it in her school and suggested that her school secretary make use of it potentially for gathering medical information about the students, those beginning of the year forms that parents just love filling out, you know, exhaustive information about each of their children. She's suggesting that possibly you could simplify that process with Google Forms. And her question then became, is it safe? Is it secure to use Google Forms for gathering
for student information, right?
Private information like that. And just a little bit of research on my part, and I don't claim to know the answer to all of this, but I did find an example, a blog post that I shared with Beth of people that had their Google Forms pulled because Google expressly states in their terms of service not to gather private information. And so if they identify that, then potentially they could take your forms down and you wouldn't have access to them anymore. So a safer alternative, a more secure alternative, maybe to use jotform.com. Martin, we use that at the Synod, and it's been an excellent resource for us. Very quick and easy form building and great back-end access to your data. It's downloadable in spreadsheet format and all that kind of stuff. And they do have secure form features, so you can use a HTTPS web address to add security to your form. So,
Whenever you're dealing with health information or medical information or student information, you're going to fall under, you know, HIPAA and FERPA type of regulations, and you want to make sure that the tools that you're using are compliant with those. And if it's not a secured connection, that, you know, that's an immediate problem, which I don't know that Google Forms are, but as you mentioned, there are tools like JotForms that do that. So plus where you're storing the information is very important to consider as well. So good.
So yeah, I just brought up JotForm just to give you an idea. There's all kinds of tools that you can make use of, including some survey kind of tools where they can rate things. There's, you know, text boxes and requesting a signature. You can include CAPTCHA on your form. There's even payment tools where you can tie it into PayPal and things. So lots of flexibility with JotForm. It's free to use, but they do have a pro level that you can get, I think, for $10 a month.
Yep. It's very inexpensive. Reasonable. Yeah. We use JotForms here at the Synod for some of our forms. And I don't know if we've ever featured or if that's ever been a pick of the week. If not, it could be. That's a great tool for forms generation.
Those wheels are always turning, Martin. Next week, you're going to hear JotForm.
I gotta keep loading the gun. I mean, it was actually a kind of a struggle this week. I had to really, you know, some weeks it comes pretty easily. I'm sure you've kind of experienced this too, mm-hmm. Sally. And then other weeks you just kind of stew on it and say, quiet. What is it going to be this week?
So. And other weeks, your podcasting partner beats you to the punch.
That's right.
So and steals a great pick.
That's right.
My goodness. Can't trust these people.
I know. All right. That's it for community feedback. We would love your community feedback. I think that's really what makes this show go and makes us smarter and hopefully our listening audience smarter in the process. And so give us your feedback. Go to wellstech.wells.net. Leave a comment there. Send an email, wellstech@wells.net. If you go to the show notes site, you can leave a voicemail. We've got a quick and easy way to do that. But you can also find us on Facebook. Use the hashtag WellsTech on Twitter. We'll find that. Pinterest, of course, Google Plus. There probably isn't a social network that we're not on. And Digo is one of our most popular areas. So use any of those tools. But the important part is not what tool you use, but what you have to say. So if you've got a comment, a question, a correction, you know, any of those, we would love to get that feedback from you. So. Next week, Sally, we are going to be talking about a problem that is in search of a solution that I think every congregation, I think, deals with at some point or another, and that's introducing some new technology to your congregation, whether it be, you know, Facebook or your website or using a form to register your child for VBS or for school, you know, whatever it is. How do you introduce that technology to your congregation in a way that there'll be acceptance and adoption? So that's going to be next week, and we'll be interviewing a couple folks involved with worship visuals, which is another question we get a lot of, and that falls neatly into that conversation about introducing tech to your congregation. If you're going to put up a screen and worship, you know, what's the best way to do that? And so on and so forth. So tune in next week for a good conversation around that topic.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's close the show with the music of Joey Schumann, Christ Be Beside Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Christ behind and before me. Christ beneath and above me. Christ with me and in me. Christ around and about me. Christ on my left and my right. Christ when I rise in the morning. Christ when I lie down at night. Christ in each heart that thinks of me. Christ in each eye that sees me. Christ in each ear that hears me. Ireland.
Christ be beside me, Christ be before me, Christ be behind me, King of my heart, Christ be within me, Christ be below me, Christ be above me, never to part. Christ on my right hand, Christ on my left hand, Christ First we invite.